My name is Regina Block, and I'm the current director for the National Memorial for the Unborn. Welcome to Stories from the Wall. For those of you who are not familiar with the National Memorial for the Unborn, we are a ministry founded to give dignity to the unborn and healing to families who are traumatized by abortion. And so today we are going to be hearing the story of Linda Thomas. Linda Thomas, formerly Linda Keener, was the very first director for the National Memorial for the Unborn, and she currently serves as the chair of the board of directors. So welcome to the podcast, Linda.
Thank you, Regina.
So we know that you have an abortion story, and so I would like for you to tell us where you were at the time and everything that was going on with you.
Okay, thank you. I was the good girl from a Christian family, the oldest of five, the one that mom never even really thought about needing to talk to me about abortion. This was back in 1976. I was a freshman in college and found out that I was pregnant. And I did the very typical teenage thing of trying to ignore it, hoping it would go away. Pregnancy does not. The father of the baby actually wanted to marry me, but I was dead set on finishing college and having a career, and in my selfishness, did not want to do that. And I remember one weekend I even went home thinking that I was going to tell my parents and just couldn't get the words out of my mouth. I didn't want to disappoint them. And so I chose abortion to cover my sin and to not have to face up to what I had done.
Mm-hmm. So you were kind of like in denial a little bit.
Very much in denial. And by the time I finally went to the abortion clinic, I was too far along for a first trimester abortion. Mm-hmm. And was told I had to wait a couple weeks to be far enough along to have a saline injection abortion.
Okay. So now, did your abortion take place here in the Chattanooga area?
Yes. It was done at a hospital, one of our major hospitals here. I was 22 weeks gestation. I had struggled so many weeks with the indecision that I had almost become numb. It was like, and many women I've talked to will express this same kind of thing, is that it's almost like we're watching someone else walk into that. Mm-hmm. It's like we emotionally detach from it. And I really don't remember a whole lot until I was in the room and they injected the saline into my womb. And for the first time, I could feel my child moving, struggling against the pain of that saline. I had asked the nurse right before, I said, "Isn't it a baby?" And her answer was, "No, honey, it's not a baby. And you really want to finish college, don't you?" And I had allowed myself to believe that lie, even though I think I probably knew it was a lie from the very beginning. But all the numbness, all of the fog lifted as soon as I felt that child moving. Mm-hmm. And became hysterical and told them to stop, it is a baby. And they said it's too late, and just sedated me. Stayed overnight in the hospital, and the next day went through a delivery, basically, of that child.
So were any of your friends or family aware that you had actually gone for...
Just my boyfriend.
Just your boyfriend.
Yeah.
And what was he saying to you at that time?
Whatever you want. You know, that's the line. That's the line they're given. They're all given. Well, if you want to be a good supportive partner, you tell her it's her decision and whatever you want. And I think for most of us, we really wish that he would say, "Absolutely not. This is my baby."
Yeah.
But he went along with it.
Okay. Yeah. So what happens next? You were able to go back to school.
Went back to school thinking that everything was going to be fine. It was going to be put behind me. But within 6 months, I went from being an ambitious honor student to being a depressed dropout. I was hearing my baby cry in the night in dreams and looking for a baby that I couldn't find. And I had never really used drugs or alcohol before, but I turned to that. Well, actually, before the drugs and alcohol, I just tried to get busy. I got permission to take an overload of courses. Mm-hmm. I went and got almost full-time job on top of that, just tried to stay busy, busy, busy for a few months. And, of course, that crashed and burned and ended up dropping out. And running from God, I think, is the biggest thing. Running from God. God, don't look at me. I've done the unforgivable. You don't want me anymore. And self-punishing. I think many of us feel like we deserve to be punished, and God's not striking us dead, so we're going to punish ourselves. So that's where a lot of the abuse comes, the alcohol and the drugs and bad relationships and all. It's like, I'm no longer worthy, so I'm just going to punish myself and go down this road.
Okay. So this is 6 months after the abortion, and so you are in this spiral. So how are you feeling emotionally and you know, physically? What's taking place in your body physically and mentally and emotionally?
I would say the numbness, trying to stay numb. You know, mm-hmm. you're just doing anything you can to stop that pain and stop having to face what's going on. So you're just self-medicating and trying to be numb.
Okay. So when did you tell your family?
Not till way down the road, actually.
Oh, okay. So what took place between you leaving school?
They knew something was wrong, obviously.
They knew something was wrong,
They knew something was wrong. And I was sitting around getting high, listening to Pink Floyd one night, and got the tap on the shoulder, where I knew before I turned around that no one was there, but it was God. Mm-hmm. And I was like, again, I was like, God, don't look at me. I've done too much. And he spoke to my heart that you are mine. You don't belong here. You know, he said, look around at these people. This is not where you belong. You are mine. And so I contacted my parents. They still did not know about the abortion at mm-hmm. the point, but they knew that I was making some really bad decisions, and they found me someplace to go. They didn't want me home. They didn't quite trust that I was really making a change yet, but found some wonderful people that took me in and began the road back to God and to sound mind.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. Yeah. So when you were on this road, what were you thinking about? You know, did you think about, I missed this opportunity to finish my education? Were you thinking about going back to school? What else was going on?
I did go back to school. Okay. Ended up, actually, my dad came up with the idea to go to a very, very strict Bible school up in Western Canada. I think he was trying to see how far away he could get me. And it was a very, very strict school. But there, studied the Bible. I just had a hunger for God at that point. And so I was just soaking it up as fast as I could. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I was keeping everybody at arm's distance. I didn't make friends up there. Mm-hmm. I was doing all the right things, leading the prayer groups and doing, but praying over and over again for God to forgive me, and trying to, at that point, I think I was trying to earn his forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you finished school?
I did finish school up there, and one night on an old wooden floor by a bunk bed, as I was praying to God for the probably millionth time for him to forgive me, I heard him speak again. Those are really the only two times that I've heard him speak in such a dramatic way. Mm-hmm. But I'll never forget. He said, Linda, your sin caused your son to die. But your sin also caused my son to die.
Mm-hmm.
And his death is enough.
Yes.
And I realized in that moment in a dramatic way that by trying to earn his forgiveness, I was saying that what Jesus had done wasn't enough. I could add something to it. Mm-hmm. You know, how ridiculous is that, right?
Right.
And so that settled the issue of forgiveness in my heart. In that moment, I knew that I was forgiven, that what Jesus had done was enough.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still a journey for me.
Sure. So you finished school. You have this assurance of his forgiveness.
Yes.
And so
I thought, never again, I'm going to have to talk about it. It's done. It's back. It's past.
Mm-hmm.
And then through some odd circumstances, odd God circumstances, my parents found out that I had had the abortion and confronted me. And by that point, since I knew I was forgiven, I could ask their forgiveness for killing their first grandson.
Yeah.
And they graciously extended that. And then not too long after that is when the local crisis pregnancy center began to be formed.
Okay.
And my mother, of course, had a heart for that since she had seen me go through this and began being one of the counselors. And she would come get me and say, Linda, you've got to talk to this woman. And at first I was totally resistant. You know, that was in my past. God's forgiven it. I'm never going to have to open that door again.
Sure.
But began to share just one-on-one with people.
Mm-hmm.
And then God tricked me. At that time, the hospital that where my abortion was done was debating whether to close that facility, whether they were going to continue to do the abortions there. And I was so naive. I didn't know anything politically. I don't know that I'd ever even read a newspaper. I was just very naive. But I thought, well, they need to hear about somebody that's been hurt there, the trauma, how from a woman's point of view. You know, they're not hearing that part of it in making this decision to close the abortion clinic. So I wrote a letter to the hospital. And I thought, nobody's going to pay attention to this. I thought, well, maybe if I CC it to the newspaper, they'll pay more attention to it. Mm-hmm. I did not know what a letter to the editor was. Can you believe that? But they published it in the Chattanooga paper as a letter to the editor.
Okay.
And I got a call from a friend of my mom's and said, Linda, I saw your letter. And I was like, what letter? She said, they published it in the paper. I saw your letter. And I want to tell you how proud I am for you to be that brave.
Well, I was not that brave.
But it became public.
Mm-hmm.
And that next Sunday going to church, I just knew that people were going to run from me.
Mm-hmm.
And a few didn't know how to deal with it. But by and large, people just surrounded me and loved me. And so it was public by that point. It was time to go ahead and get busy and eventually became the director of the pregnancy center there and then in Chattanooga. And saw God just redeem, redeem. But even after I became director of the first little pregnancy center, I had still never taken the other step. There's two steps. There's dealing with the guilt, and then there's dealing with the grief. And I had never acknowledged my child really as my child. And never grieved. And there was a Bible study going on in Chattanooga called Forgiven and Set Free. We still use the same study that allowed me to not only deal with the guilt, but to deal with the grief and to acknowledge the eternal worth of my child that someday I'm going to get to see in heaven and walk through that grieving process and the closure and the peace and the joy that comes after that.
Wonderful. So, how did you find out that your child was a boy? And
it's a great question.
Yeah.
And I don't know for sure. I may be surprised in heaven. I know when I was delivering him, I wanted to see, and they held me down, so I did not see. But I think God just gives us a sense of that. In working with women through the years, I think so many times he just gives us a real sense whether it was a boy or a girl. And I think that helps with the grieving process because it's no longer an it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a he or a she,
right.
A son or a daughter.
Right.
And I think if we're wrong in heaven, it won't be any big deal. He'll have all that sorted out. But for our sakes, I think it helps to be able to put a name and put an identity on that child.
Yes.
To help us in the grieving process.
Okay, so you believe that the Lord has given you an idea that your child was a boy, and what's the name of your child?
David.
David.
Mm-hmm. I always love the name David.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, and the Bible says that in heaven, God's going to give us all a new name anyway. So it's going to be on a white stone. So if it's the wrong one, that's fine. But I think it has given him honor to have a name. I mean, we name our animals, you know. Why can't we name our unborn?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So having gone through all of this, the Lord really prepared you for what you were going to be doing with a national memorial for the unborn.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As I became director of the Pregnancy Center and then began to lead other people through Bible studies and healing ministries, and then when all that happened with us getting the building and trying to figure out what we were going to do with it, it just all dovetailed together. God just brought all the pieces together, and to be able to offer people that opportunity, it was a real privilege.
Mm-hmm. And you're still very active in helping women deal with their abortions. Tell us a little bit more about what you're doing now.
Well, I've got two or three hats on right now. through the local pregnancy center over in Middle Tennessee, I am doing some, we call them set free groups, but it's usually the Forgiven and Set Free. And there's some other wonderful curriculums out there, too. God has just raised up so many new, fresh, great ministries that are offering healing to people. So I am still doing that. I'm working with another group called An Even Place, who is doing virtual groups.
Mm-hmm.
So so often people maybe don't have something real local for walking through this. Plus the virtual groups allows people to have such anonymity, you know, that they can come through a virtual group and deal with this in a real safe place.
Mm-hmm.
We also are doing some networking. We have a Tennessee coalition network of people that are doing abortion recovery ministries so that we can know what each other are doing. And that's always been a passion of mine, to not reinvent the wheel, but let's work together.
Yes.
And that's part of what we want to do at the memorial, is to be able to network groups that are doing this nationwide and be a part of each other and support each other.
Well, you have a fantastic story. And it's a story of God's compassion and His grace and His mercy.
Absolutely.
And, of course, His forgiveness. And it's so wonderful to be able to look at you and to see that you have indeed embraced His forgiveness and enjoy His healing and have an opportunity to acknowledge your child. We're thankful for God, for David, and for you. And thank you so much for being willing to share your story with us. It's a privilege to hear it and to know what God has brought you through and to see that you are trusting Him for everything. Again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Regina.
Thank you so much for joining us for the Stories from the Wall podcast. We're grateful for your giving us your time. And please subscribe to the podcast, like, and share it with others. And if you have a story of abortion, or if you know of someone who has a story of abortion, please contact us at office@memorialfortheunborn.org, or you can go to our website, memorialfortheunborn.org, and click on the contact page and provide information, and we will be glad to contact you. Thank you so much. Have a great day.